Hey, this is Evan Longoria of your San Francisco Giants, and you're listening to TortureCast.
You're listening to a podcast by and for fans of the San Francisco Giants. Let's go, Giants! With hosts Willie Dills, Chad King, Ben Lee, and Eric Nathanson. Dedicated to the greatest team in Major League Baseball, the San Francisco Giants. This is TortureCast.
Hey, it's Monday, September 10th, 2018, and this is episode 153 of the TortureCast, the podcast by and for fans of the San Francisco Giants. And we're not happy fans, and I'm assuming neither are you, unless you are some sort of Schadenfreude Dodger fan tuning in just to hear us whine and bitch and complain and commiserate about the Giants season and their recent woes. But it's not just me here to commiserate today. I'm Chad King, but joining me is Eric Nathanson. Eric, man. Not going so well.
I got a double kick in the nuts this weekend. My Bears lost in Green Bay, so none of my sports teams won in the state of Wisconsin. Instead of boycotting cheese, I'm going to eat as much cheese as possible to get my revenge on the state of Wisconsin.
They're going to help their business there, I guess. I guess that's okay. There's probably a few Bears fans up there.
Not I'm going to eat up their product, you know, so other people can't eat it.
Be a cheese shortage. All due to one guy in Georgia. There's one guy over here is just eating all the cheese. Yeah, it was a bad weekend for Giants baseball. Bad weekend for your Bears. Bad weekend for my 49ers. We were talking pre-show. It looked like both teams, the Bears should have won, no doubt. I think they had a better chance at winning, considering they were up by freaking 20 points. Not trying to rub it in, Eric. But Rodgers and the Pack came back and won by one. And the Niners lost by eight, but it was one of those games where they had a fumble at the one. They had two passes dropped in the end zone. They had another 40, 50-yard pass dropped. They had a pick six they gave up, four turnovers overall. It was a game they absolutely could have won and probably won handily. But they were still in a position to win the game at the end, and Garoppolo threw his third pick of the game back in their end of the end zone. So it is what it is. Football is back, which has been a distraction to the Giants, because I watched the Niners game, to be honest, yesterday, because it was the first game of the season, and didn't really keep up with the Giants game. I did watch the highlights and kind of studied a little bit of what happened during the game, but, you know, we recorded Thursday, so it's only three games we're kind of talking about here and a bunch of other stuff, but they got swept by Milwaukee, and yesterday's game kind of was the cherry on top, the bad season so far. They've lost eight in a row. They're now 11 games back of the Rockies in fourth place. Dodgers are a half game back, and the Diamondbacks are 2.5 games back. But it was a bad series, Eric. I mean, all around. And I think what one of the glaring differences, because I did watch most of the first two games of the series, was the Brewers just looked better. I mean, to be honest, it wasn't like, oh, they got a lucky hit, a lucky bomb, lucky this, lucky that. They just look better the entire series. I mean, clearly there's a separation between these two teams.
Yeah, they are better too. They're a deeper ball club. A lot of their players put the ball in play more so than the Giants, who continued their trend of striking out in double digits. Yesterday was the first time on the road trip they didn't have 10 or more strikeouts in a game, so that was a slight improvement. But the Brewers are. They're just a better team. As somebody who's watched, I literally watched every Brewers game last week, except pretty much yesterday, because I also watched football. But the Brewers were playing the Cubs, and they're playing the Cubs again tonight, so I am stuck watching more Brewers baseball. They're a better team. They've got better bullpen with Knebel, Jeffers, Hader. Their starting pitching can go pretty deep if it needs to. Council can play the matchups if he wants to, and their bench is just deep. And like guys like Scope yesterday hitting a grand slam, and he hadn't done jack with the Brewers. They got like guys like Granderson now on their bench, and then what can you say about Christian Yelich? The guy's he's an MVP candidate. You said it in passing on Thursday, I believe it was, but it's true. He's an MVP candidate, especially if Milwaukee could somehow catch Chicago. But even with them making the playoffs, he is. And I mean, Giants starting pitching can only keep their fingers in the dam for so long. I mean, they didn't let up a lot of huge runs this week. What was it? They gave up 6 yesterday, 4 and 4. Mm-hmm. You know, but the Giants only scored 2, 3, and 3. And let's see. Stratton gave up a couple walks in one inning, and that kind of did it for him on Saturday. Friday, Strickland gave it up late. Yeah, and the bullpen wasn't as sharp as it's been. So the Giants, you know, didn't play as well in certain aspects of the game, and the Brewers were able to take advantage. Yeah. So good teams do. If you're a good team down the stretch, apparently you want to play the Giants. You're going to beat them in all the little things.
Yeah, the Giants are trying to play the role of spoilers, and they are failing miserably against Colorado and Milwaukee, going 0-6 on that six-game road trip. It's a first winless six-game road trip since 2015. They've lost 8 in a row, like I said. That could still continue. I was just curious because I couldn't remember just off the top of my head, and I don't have those stats particularly, but just looking at the longest losing streaks in club history, and it's actually 10 in San Francisco history, which has happened twice, in 1996, so not, you know, 22 years ago, and then 1985, one of their bad years in which they lost 100 games. And, I mean, hell, Atlanta's coming into town, man, and Bum already pitched yesterday. And I know we got Rodriguez coming up and others, but I hate to say it, but 2 more games and they've tied their San Francisco record. Their club record, however, is 13. And that was set in 1902 and 1944 when they were in New York. So they're still within striking distance of that. Not trying to talk like they should go for it. I'm just saying.
No, I mean, you're totally talking me into rooting for the Braves the next 2 days. I mean, wouldn't it be crazy? 10 is the longest? That's shocking.
Yeah, in San Francisco history. And I thought it would have been longer. I thought, you know, maybe they have a 12 or 14 in there. But the longest in their 100 and whatever 40 years of Giants baseball is 13. They're only 5 away from that. But even in San Francisco history, we're talking 60 years. They've only done it twice, and they just need 2 more games to tie that futility. So it's a sign of a bad team.
Yeah, well, isn't Atlanta still in first? So they've got mm-hmm. Atlanta and Colorado coming in, 2 first-place clubs.
Yep.
Although, to be fair to the Giants, they're much better at home. They're 39-30 at home and 29-46 on the road.
Yeah, like, that's been the Achilles heel this year. I mean, yes, we can talk about injuries and the lack of hitting. And of course, yeah, all that applies, but they just seem to perform so much more poorly on the road. And I do need to look at that disparity between the home and the road records. I do wonder, and I don't think they've, you know, set any kind of major league record so far, but I do wonder, what are the biggest separations in terms of winning percentage of major league teams between their road and home record? Because here they are now sitting 8 games under 500. Ironically, they started this losing streak right when they were at 500. And I wonder, you know, what that difference is in terms of winning percentage or number of wins. Because that's huge between the two.
I mean, it fleshes out +9 at home, minus 17 on the road. So 9, 17, that's 8. There you go. What are they? Yeah. You said they're eight under. Just even being that much better on the road, there's so many things like that. The Colorado, how they've been in Colorado, that's just bad. That is a horrible disparity. That is a lot of wins, 17 and what is that, 9? So that's 26 victories. It's a span of how many they've won on the road compared to at home compared to the road. That's crazy. It's a shame that all these home games at the end of the season don't mean anything for them.
Yeah, that's the equivalent if you had two teams with those records. That's a 13 game separation between the two, right?
Yeah.
26 games, so divided by 2 is 13. So yeah, it's like the Giants home team is 13 games better than the Giants road team. So not good. Not good at all. But it's something they need to improve for next year, no doubt. And I think the salt was definitely opened up and poured on the wound yesterday. We'll talk about Mad Bum in a second, but we had Duggar. And I didn't see the injury until afterwards. I thought, you know, they said, oh, Steve Duggar, he dislocated his left patella and he's out for the season. I was like, oh God, what did he do? Did he dive? Did he slide? Did he do something in the outfield? What happened? No, he swung. He swung. That's what he did. Nothing happened. The ball didn't hit him. No one touched him. He didn't slip in the box or anything like that. He just took a nice cut from the left side there from the box, and his back leg, his left leg, just buckled. He just buckled. It was a foul ball. And he went to the ground in extreme pain and hobbled off with the help of a couple of Giants, and he's out for the season. And that's, I don't know if I've ever seen anything like that.
Ryder Jones is who you're talking about. You said Duggar.
Oh, I'm, and, I'm so sorry.
There's somebody, I can't
Duggar.
Remember who it is.
I meant
is
after, it was Duggar last week. Right, yeah, yeah. Right. I meant Ryder Jones, sorry.
I can't remember who it is. Some regular is back this year after doing the same thing last year on another team. I can't remember who it is, but they shredded their knee in the same way. Like, nothing hit it, just the way they turned, you know, caught something. And
yeah.
And Ryder Jones, they had just brought him up with the September call-ups. I believe he was part of the last wave. And there was another guy they wanted to maybe see at first base, give some time to, so that they can think about trading Belt in the offseason. I think that that's where the management's head is going. And just like you point out, Duggar, Ryder Jones, another young guy that we're not going to get a chance to look at because mm-hmm. Some freak injury. And that injury, it's funny, that injury sent me down a path. Now, we're not trying to be too negative. The Giants lost three games. We pretty much glossed over it. I mean, we'll talk about Bumgarner in a second, but that's it. They're not playing well. But this is not an excuse for this year, but these are the injuries that the Giants have had to deal with this season. In March, before the season started, Bumgarner's finger and Melanson with his arm, and Will Smith was still on the shelf with Tommy John surgery. Then in April, Cueto went on the DL with his ankle and then his arm. Shark with whatever, his shoulder. Pence with his thumb. Williamson had a concussion after running into the wall. Panic screwed up his thumb on Puig's leg. And then you go to May, Derek Law, something happened to him. It didn't list it. Hanson went down with a hammy. That Valdez pitcher went down with an elbow. Then you get to June, Belt went out with the appendix. Longo hit his finger. Strickland punched a door. You get to July, Belt hurt his knee, Panic hurt his groin, Pablo hurt his hammy. Get to August, Rodriguez hurt his hamstring, Posey with his hip, he's out, Duggar with his freak thing with the shoulder, and then you get to September and Jones. That's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, 16, 17, 18, 19 different players that have hit the disabled list for the Giants this season off the Major League Ball Club.
And you did it in sequence there, and that doesn't even include, like you said, guys who went out and came back and went out again, or guys like Cueto, who you say went out, but then he came back and then he's out for the season. Pablo yep. goes out with his hamstring, out for the season. Duggar out for the season. Jones out for the season. I mean, it's not even all these guys are 2 week, you know, disabled list guys. These are repeat offenders and guys who went out for the entire season. And so they have to keep replacing these ones with journeymen and call-ups. And even the call-ups are going down. I mean, it's an infirmary right now. And
19.
I mean, every team has to deal with injuries, but there's no doubt the Giants have had more than their fair share of injuries this year. It's just been awful. And, you know, we can sit here and say, well, if they were healthy, they would be in playoff contention. Maybe. I mean, I know 11 games is a lot, and I'm not saying injuries could overcome 11 games, but I think the psychology of a team can get down after they're just browbeat, you know, down to the ground. And when you're losing all these players and you're losing close games and your bullpen's blowing a few here and there and it's a lack of hitting, which is a contributing factor is the injuries. It just snowballs from there. I mean, we both played baseball, not at the major league level, but when you play high school sports or any organized sport and you've lost 3, 4, 5 in a row, it really does snowball from there. And you just go, God, what else could happen next? And sometimes you can kind of get set back on your feet. And I know not all these guys think like this all the time. They're thinking every day is a new day. You got to go in thinking it's a fresh slate and I just got to help my team win today. But there's got to be an accumulation, especially with these guys playing 162 games. It's a long fucking season. And yeah. it's got to wear on him to a certain point. You know, Bochy getting ejected. He's got to be, you know, with his ticker, who knows what's going on with his health right now. But this has been a bad season. Not as bad as last year, but it's been bad.
I mean, you got guys like Gorky's who've played 125 games this season. He leads the team with 15 home runs. Him, Kutch, and Longoria. Mm-hmm. Like, I mean, if you could imagine, Gorky's leading a team with, yeah. Even though he's hitting .241 and his on-base percentage is under .300.
Yeah,
it's It does. You get in the funk, and the funk just keeps going. And guys like D-Rod, who are pitching tonight, well, he's pitching tonight, they kind of can get you out of it, and that's what you look forward to down the stretch here when the team's kind of playing out the string.
Yeah.
So, you know, you look for maybe D-Rod getting a good start, and then maybe Suarez feeding off it, and then you roll the dice with Holland on Wednesday afternoon. I mean, who knows? They could put together a couple of games. They need to score more than four runs, and they're generally good. I mean, their pitching, as much as it's had a couple of hiccups, Maranta, I know, got hit the other day. Strickland got hit the other day. As much as their bullpen's been getting hit, they're within all of these games. They're just slightly not as good as the competition.
They don't often get blown out. They've played so many one- and two-run games. More than half their games have been such. The extra inning games have piled up. But, you know, it puts a little bit of wear and tear on the bullpen for sure. And as of a couple of weeks ago, since June 1st, the Giants had the best bullpen ERA in the National League. So I know a lot of people were criticizing the bullpen because when we talked about this on Thursday, when you play more one run and close games than most of the league, the bullpen failures are going to be magnified because you don't have that 4 or 5 run lead. The bullpen gives up 2 runs. No one cares. You got a 1 run lead. The bullpen gives up 2 runs and suddenly they lose. Then everyone cares. So it's been a magnification of the lack of offense, which kind of unfairly, I think, at times highlights the bullpen failures. But again, the stress of the starters not going deep and the extra inning games and just the close, tense games, I think, just puts a lot of pressure on that bullpen. And their hitting has been, to me, obviously the number one issue. And that's what they need to rectify going into the offseason.
I mean, they're 0-8 in September. They haven't won a game yet this month, and they're outscored 40-23. So what is that, 17 runs? Yep. So it's barely over 2 runs a game. So most of the games are close. They're only giving up 5 runs a game, and in September you think you'd be hitting a little better than they are, but they're not. 23 runs in 8 games. It's less than 3 runs a game. Wow, they're 0-8 in September. I mean, I can't remember, like, you know, everything aside, I can't remember a team starting out September this bad.
No.
You know, with the injuries and the way things have gone, like, yeah, we knew a few weeks ago that the season was kind of done, but we didn't expect it to, like, take this turn. We thought the Giants would at least be competitive and maybe take 1 of 3 at Coors, 1 of 3 in Milwaukee. You know, I had a friend ask the other day, are the Giants going to help out the Cubs and win in Milwaukee? I was like, oh, yeah, they should win one. They'll hit there. And then they, again, didn't hit there. But it's just it's like ugly what's happened to start September here. I did not expect them to just take a direct left turn off a cliff and not be able to do a thing.
Well, they won 5 out of 6 before their 8-game losing streak, so they've lost 9 out of 10 now. But of course, those 6 games were at home, and I think again that's the difference. You look at the last home series, and I think they went 4-2 or 5-2 against them, and. You know, it is what it is. Before that, they went on the road and they lost 2 of 3 to the Mets, all three in Cincinnati. You know, they did win 2 out of 3 in LA, but their road record has just been awful this year. And it's just really been the beginning of the season. They kind of stabilized a little bit in the middle of the season on the road. And then recently again, they are woefully so far under 500. It's almost like, I wonder what the line, I haven't been checking, but I wonder what the lines in Vegas are every time the Giants are on the road. Like, what's their algorithm to kind of figure out, like, oh, well, the Giants are on the road. I don't care if Madison Bumgarner's pitching. You know, we're going to add an extra half run or run to the opposition and make it, you know, that much harder for them to win. But, yeah.
I mean, they had that, what, 1 winning road trip at the end of July, beginning of August against the Padres and Diamondbacks. And that's it. Every other road trip has been like 3-7 and 2-4 and 0-6. They're not even breaking even on the road. They're just getting hammered. Like last time they played Atlanta, they won the first 3 and then they got swept and lost the first 2 in Pittsburgh to lose 6 straight. I'll bet you they play at least 500 ball at home down the stretch. So they'll be a little spoiler here for Atlanta and Colorado at home, and maybe the Dodgers at the end. Yeah.
Now, extending into their last road trip, they lost 2 out of 3 in New York, so that makes it 10 out of 11 on the road. Sorry, they actually split against the Mets, but I'm talking about the last, 11. And then, of course, they were swept by Cincinnati, and they split against the Mets. So, that they've won, one, two games out of their last 14 on the road?
Yeah. Oof.
2 out of 14 on the road. Actually, 2 out of 15 if you include the last Dodger game, which they lost. So 2 out of 15, that's 2 and 13. That'll kill any team at any time. All right, so let's talk about what happened yesterday in the game. The Giants were up 2-1 late in the game. I think it was the seventh inning or so. And Madison Bumgarner had some beef with Ryan Braun, and so he came in side with two runners on and two outs, and three pitches in a row inside. The third pitch hit Braun, and there had been words exchanged earlier in the game, and Braun, to his credit, just took off his shin guard and pretty much ran down to first. He was looking at Bum, and Hundley kind of got in between. The Milwaukee bench got crazy into it. They had three players, including their manager, ejected from the game, but it loaded the bases for Jonathan Scope coming up, and he did exactly what the Brewers thought the best medicine would have been. He had a grand slam, put him up ahead at that point, and that was the game changer. And my question is, we've seen Bumgarner, and his fiery attitude and demeanor has absolutely been a benefit to this team. There's no question about it. I mean, what he's done through all three World Series championships, clearly in 2014, and many of his other games where he just basically doesn't take any bullshit from anyone. But I will say, I think sometimes the act gets a little tired, especially when he's barking at the umpire for, tight calls. And he's, Puig, I love it when him and Puig fight. That's great because he's a Dodger and it's fun. And they both kind of have those kind of personalities. But, when he gets in these little tiffs with guys, like I don't think Ryan Braun's a bad guy or anything like that. Sometimes I think he might take it to a little bit of an extreme. And if it's a super important series or, they're coming down in the playoffs or it is the playoffs, that's one thing. Not saying he should hit someone to load the bases while you're leading by one, of course. And maybe that's the flip side to this. Maybe that's one side I've never considered. He's thinking, we've lost seven in a row. Hold on a second. We've lost seven in a row. I don't care if he hits a grand slam, after this. I'm putting this guy on because he's pissed me off so much. But overall, it still kind of hurt his team. And I don't know, where are you kind of sitting on Madison Bumgarner's antics lately? Oh,
Bum's a red ass. He'll take anything as a personal slight and try to use it to his advantage. And it works well on a team that's winning and clicking and riding his back and taking that attitude. And it looks kind of jerky when you're 10 games under 500 and you're not playing as well and your pitches aren't getting over as well and you're screaming at umpires as well as other fans. So I don't mind it. I don't mind Bumgarner being all fired up like he was. I think he was trying to get himself fired up. Like you said, Braun, just kind of took it. And I mean, honestly, Ryan Braun's not a fighter. He's not going to go out there and charge the mound. And I think Bum knows that. That's why it was funny that Council and Miley and some other pitcher got ejected. And then Bum got what he deserved, the Scope Grand Slam. And in years when the Giants are rolling along and they need that spark, Bum gets that guy to pop up or strike out. The inning is over and they get out of there. But in this case, he knew he was going to put Braun on. He'd rather face Scope, and so he decided to go after him. I mean, yeah. I don't hate it. It is. He's that kind of guy who has to play with a chip on his shoulder, and he has been very animated with umpires this year. But truth be told, I've been frustrated with umpires this year. Doesn't matter what game I'm watching. I really feel like the strike zone is floating and inconsistent. And balls that are called at the bottom some days are not called later in the game. Some at the top. I mean, you know how it is. And so I get his frustrations when he's been yelling about the strike zone this year. So it's been hard to hold that against him. But all the welfare and the goodness he built up with the World Series run, it's kind of worn off because the Giants aren't good anymore. Yeah. So it just kind of seems like an old veteran who's not with it anymore, looking like he's whining about things. But you put the Giants back in contention, and that's the fire of Bumgarner, and that's the kind of guy Bumgarner is, and he'll get that out for you. You know, mm-hmm. he would have gotten Scope to get out. So I don't mind. I don't mind Mad Bum's antics. I don't think he needs to be taken out of that locker room just yet.
Oh no. I don't think, you know, to that extent. You know, the Giants did have a tough time against the umpires this Milwaukee series. I don't have the stats in front of me to, you know, to prove that, but you know that Giants Strike Zone Twitter account,
yeah.
I follow that, and there was a proliferation of, you know, call hurts Giants, ball three should have been strike three, that kind of thing. It was like every inning there was one of those, not only against their pitchers but against their hitters, more so than the opposite way. So I'm not saying the umpires have anything against the Giants. It just seems like this particular series, they really got burned by a lot of calls. And, yeah, maybe it cost them a game, maybe it didn't. But it was frustrating to watch, because the games I did see, the first two ones, you know, they have that little computerized strike zone on there, and there were so many of these balls. If they're right on the corner, right on the edge,
yeah.
just outside of the edge, you can't blame the umpire for those. You really can't. But the ones that are, you know, you see them, they're a couple inches below the zone or outside of the zone, that those are the ones you really get pissed off. And the fact that, you know, you flip it the other way and they're not calling those strikes when they're floating on the edge, you know, against the Brewers. And so it was frustrating, but there's not much you can do in that situation. And when Bumgarner gets pissed against the umpires, it's like, yeah, I don't think he's going to call any extra strikes for you in the rest of the game. I don't think he's going to.
He's screwed when he does that.
That's the problem.
Umpire experience. You throw a fit on the mound as an umpire, you're not getting those close calls, especially if you can't keep it in the zone.
Yeah, that's the biggest problem, I think, is not just the distraction, but the fact that you've not made a friend in that umpire. And then you start getting this reputation, too. And certainly during that particular game, that umpire, he's a human, and he's just going to say, all right, well, fuck, you throw that again, I'm definitely not calling it a strike next time. And it's just, it's the male ego. It's the way it works. It's the way the baseball, you know, system works, and we all know it. And I just wish he could back off a little bit on that stuff.
I mean, as a pitcher, you want the umpire hunting for strikes. You want his eyes tracking strikes, and you want him in the rhythm of calling strikes for you. So when he does do that and whine a little bit, and whining is what it is, the umpires are less likely to hunt for the strikes. They'll still call the strikes they see.
Sure.
It's just it's a human nature thing. It's nothing against Bumgarner per se. It's just kind of how it swings. And yeah. It's weird because Milwaukee is a great hitter's background. Everybody says it, and then the Giants don't really hit. And the umpires are all over the place, you know. It's like nobody can see there but the Brewers, apparently.
Yeah, they're doing well there.
Yeah, they're fine.
All right, so I had an interesting thought about Hunter Pence. McCovey Chronicles had a nice little article about what to do with Hunter Pence. And I think everyone understands that he's not going to be back with the Giants next year. I mean, there could be some weird situation in which Hunter Pence, because he's a very competitive spirit and he takes really, really good care of his body, that he is going to seek an opportunity with a team next year. And it could be that no one wants him. And that could result in the Giants inviting him to camp. And that could result in him having a good spring training and them signing him to, you know, not the minimum, but something, you know, like $1 million, right? Like the Rangers did with Tim Lincecum or something like that. So I can't rule out the possibility of it, but I think it's a very low possibility. But he hasn't announced any intention about retiring, nor do I fully expect that. I think he's such a competitor that I do think he's going to try and hang around with the team next year. So if he doesn't announce his retirement, because, you know, in the past that's happened with certain Giants like Vogelsong and Affelt and a few others, where they were able to send them off, if you will, at the end of the season in the last homestand. So if that doesn't happen, the Giants are clearly going to be playing Pence a lot with all of the outfield injuries and the trade of McCutchen. He's platooning right now, but he's going to be getting his fair share of at-bats. What do you think the Giants are going to do? Is it just play out the string and then he just you know, rides off into the sunset, and then maybe at a later date during some reunion, you know, they honor him for all of his, you know, contributions for 2012 and 2014? Or do you think it's just nothing? Because it just seems like I wish the Giants would do something, but they can't do anything if he doesn't announce his retirement. You know what I mean?
Yeah, and you don't want him to announce his retirement, because if he feels like he can do it, like, more power to him. Let him go try to do it.
Yeah, he's not 40 years old or anything. I mean, he
no, can still play. Yeah. I mean, I can picture him, like, languishing on some AL West bench, like the Angels or the Mariners or the Rangers. Rangers, I guess, would be likely, since that's kind of hometown for him, even though Houston's more hometown. But I just don't see any room for him on Houston's bench.
Not with the Astros, no way.
Like, I think that that's about it. And the Giants being committed to knowing that they have to overhaul some things, I don't think that they're going to even offer him a nominal minor league invite or anything like that. So I think he's going to have to find it elsewhere. And if he doesn't, I mean, they're going to have to just honor him at some other time, you know? Yeah. Let him take the mic at the end of the year. That's fine. You know, he's still the leader that's left in the clubhouse. I mean, Bum's not going to take the mic. But and if Hunter doesn't catch on anywhere and he wants to learn coaching or get into something with an organization, I bet the Giants would be more than happy to find a fit for him. If not, he and Lexi will probably just, you know, go become coffee roasters and play video games and hang out all the time. So, I mean, it's a win-win for him. And I think it's funny. I saw Hank Schulman talking about this the other day. He's like, there's not as much venom at the ballpark as there is on Twitter every time Pence plays. You know, when Pence is in, everybody's screaming, he's horrible, he sucks, get him out of there. Whereas at the ballpark, he's getting cheered, he's getting standing ovations. And, you know, I kind of can get that. And at this point, I don't think there's any reason to boo him coming into the game or feel like it's a white flag. Like, just, you know, celebrate the things that Hunter did for this ball club. He was part of winning tradition. He was the preacher in 2012. He was the guy who said, I want to come in tomorrow and see what, you know, Terrio's wearing. Like, that was 6 years ago. That was a big part of the 2012 Giants. And that was his first half a year with the team. So I think it's, you know, it's nice to just enjoy Pence for what he is. I hope he homers at least once on one of these homestands, or, you know, he gets one off Kershaw during that last weekend against the Dodgers, something like that. That'd be nice. It'd be really cool to see him go out like that.
Yeah, it's one of those things. He keeps impeccable care of his body. He doesn't put anything bad in his body. He's always working out. He's one of those guys where I'm a little surprised to see the decline so rapidly, just because of age. And I know he has had a few injuries, don't get me wrong, but just overall, like, the hand-eye coordination, the power, those kinds of things that naturally degrade with age, it just seems to be such a precipitous drop-off with him, despite the fact that he takes such good care of himself. But you have guys like Bartolo Colon, who, you know, I mean, big sexy. Not going to say he is the best nutritionist in the world, and he doesn't probably take the best care of his body, but, you know, maybe that's the genetic factor. Maybe that's just a combination of factors you just can't put your finger on. But to see the difference between those two kind of body types and lifestyles, it is a little, perplexing to see the drop-off that Pence has had. But it's happened to others in the past, and so it's not, you know, unheard of.
Yeah, but he, like, just lost it. Like, his hand-eye coordination and his reflexes just, like, disappeared overnight.
That's the weird thing, yeah. It's not like a guy who just was, oh, he's just injured all the time, you know, or he gained 50 pounds and he clearly isn't taking care of himself. He clearly does take care of himself. But his, like you said, his hand-eye coordination, his bat speed, his just ability to connect is just, it's evaporated. And to think a few years ago, he was hitting over 20 home runs. And now he's got two this year, which that was a question if he was even going to hit one.
Yeah,
at one point,
right. You know? I was so happy he got at least one. Yeah. Thankfully, he hit two. I think he got one at home this year, which is nice.
He has. So anyway, I love Hunter Pence. He's done so much for the Giants. Just like a lot of these guys, they've signed to these massive contracts that kind of, you know, drop off into oblivion, which is, seems to be a little bit of a curse. Maybe a little bit of the selling the soul to the devil for the three world championships. But again, I'll take it. We've lived it, Eric, and I never thought we'd ever see those days. So even if we have some dark days ahead, it's better than pretty much most of the other teams in the major leagues. So I'll live with it.
I don't think we have dark days ahead. I think the Giants should have a decent plan going into next year, but obviously we will talk about that towards the end of the season and when they enter the off season. I'm pretty sure they're willing to spend more money. Who knows what happens with, you know, Bryce Harper and all of those things. Who knows? And the Giants, I decided since everything's doom and gloom with the Giants, yes, they suck. They lost three since the last time we recorded. They haven't won a game in the month of September. They can't hit the ball farther than my Aunt Mildred. It just hasn't been good. So I decided to find something today in Giants history. Today, September 10th, the Giants were down 3-0 in the seventh when manager Alvin Dark sent up three consecutive Alous to bat in the same inning. First, Jesus Alou is a pinch hitter, grounded out. Then Matty Alou, also a pinch hitter, struck out. And then Philippe Alou hitting a ground out back to the pitcher, Carlton Wiley. And the Giants lost the game, but it was pretty cool that the Alous all got to hit in the same inning as well as play in the same year. And I was trying to find something positive about the Giants because there's not much in 2018 that's positive anymore.
No, not so much. Yeah, you're right. We're going to be talking about this as we wrap up the season. We're going to be covering the playoffs, of course, but we need to talk a lot of hot stove coming up in the next month or two. But one of the intriguing possibilities, which we don't get into right now, is the fact that Madison Bumgarner is trade bait. And we've talked about this a little bit before, saying there's no way they're going to trade him. But, you know, I think we have to keep it on the back burner for the hot stove. It's just, I think it's a possibility. Not thinking it's likely, but the fact of the matter is, you know, they may not sign him. I mean, they're going to have to give him an unbelievable sum of money for him to stay with the Giants. And there's a lot of other teams out there that can afford him, like the Yankees.
I think they
and
do
and
it.
Others.
I think so. Belt's the guy that we have to consider as possibly getting traded as well.
Yeah, I think he's way more likely, for sure, because Belt's one of those guys who keeps showing streaks and flashes of brilliance and just can't sustain it. And he's a very serviceable first baseman in the major leagues, but if he has any value left, they need to capitalize on that now before he starts, you know, kind of degrading more because of age and his concussions and other injuries. And so, you know, you need to strike with the, you know, while the iron's hot. So anyway, interesting discussions to come in the future. All right. So we're going to talk about who's hot and who's not. Who's hot? Austin Slater is 8 for his last 21 over his last 6 games. Aramis Garcia, who has come up and serviced, you know, spot starts here and there and some pitch hit appearances, does have a couple of bombs. He's 5 for 11. Alan Hansen is 5 for his last 14. And Derek Holland, I mean, he's a guy who started the season so poorly. But lately, he has just really turned it up. His last 5 starts, he is 2-3, but that's pretty much an indication of the Giants' offense because his ERA is 1.61. His batting average against is 190, and he has 27 strikeouts in his last 28 innings pitched. His season ERA is now down to 3.54, and you compare that to Madison Bumgarner, who's at 3.30. So he's not that far off of Mad Bum at this point, considering his performance. He's been remarkable lately, and I think he's definitely something or a guy that the Giants need to keep their eyes on to potentially re-sign for next year because they don't have Johnny Cueto next year. That's like number one hole right there. Boom, Tommy Johnny's out. So they need to replace him.
That's impressive. Derek Holland was released around this time by the White Sox last season.
Yeah.
And here he is with an ERA of 3.54 on the season, still pitching. And he's going to pitch through September. He's going to keep taking his turn. There's no reason for him not to. They should sign him back. He seems to fit in perfectly with this team. I didn't realize he'd pitched that well lately. Like, it seems like everybody between him, Suarez, even Stratton his last couple starts, Rodriguez, none of them are pitching bad. They're all pitching pretty decently. It's good to see. That's why I have hope for next year already. Pitching will do that to you. Pitching will make you drunk.
Despite, you know, Shark going down and Cueto going down, their starting pitching has not been that bad. Their bullpen has not been that bad. It is just the lack of hitting. It's just the lack of hitting, man. If they could just be average in the National League, you know, they'd be probably above 500 right now. So it's extremely frustrating and a huge, you know, hole they need to address in the offseason. So hopefully that happens. So who's not? I mean, the whole team pretty much. We got Shaw, who's 1-for-17 in the major league so far with 11 strikeouts in 17 at-bats. And he's got his one bomb, of course, for that one hit. But, you know, Chris Shaw, man, that's not good. That's not good. So he's still going to get his playing time and see what he can do. Gorky's 3-for-his-last-25. Brandon Belt, 5-for-his-last-33. And then Bumgarner, he gave up the grand slam last game, and then game before that against Colorado, it wasn't too good either. So his last 11 innings pitched, his last two starts, 11 earned runs. So that's a 9.0 ERA, giving up four bombs. And his ERA over that span has gone from 2.68, which is excellent, to the 3.30. So, yeah, I mean, he's one of those guys you've relied on, and the last couple starts, not so good.
I was shocked when you read off the Holland ERA and then Bum 330. I was shocked to see Bum was up at 330, and now I see why. I mean, that's a huge jump. That's a half a run jump for Bum with 11 runs in the last 11 innings. And Shaw, like, I just want to see the man get a single. Like, just rocket one into the outfield. Like, it doesn't have to be all or nothing. Just make contact with the ball. Like, yeah. I'm cool with you still swinging for the fence. Mickey Mantle said that every time he was up there, he swung as hard as he could. He was swinging for the fences. So I'm good with that. But sometimes he's got to fall in as, like, singles or even doubles or something like that. I mean, just, like a little more contact out of the guy. But, like, yeah, it's baseball. Promising with all that power. It's, like, just some contact.
Baseball's clearly moved to this launch angle, exit velocity. Who cares how many times you strike out, just as long as you hit runs. Oh, it's the shift. I'm not going to bunt. I'm going to hit over the shift. We realize that's what the game has transitioned into. It has. There's no question about that. We talked about that last podcast, too. Chris Shaw is apparently trying to do that to the extreme. So, you know, maybe he'll hit a couple bombs this homestand and strike out another eight times and be like, see, it's either a strikeout or a home run. That's just what I do. And, you know, but 1 out of 11 is not good, Chris. So, but he just got called up. So we're going to have to give him a little bit of a break on this. He had a great, you know, 3-run bomb, for his first major league hit and his only major league hit. He's going to get some action here in this coming homestand. So, it's at AT&T Park though. So, you know,
yeah, like, good luck. Hit the water. Good luck, so Rook. Easily. He really could.
Yeah. No, he's definitely one of those guys, right? I mean, if he does develop into the guy that they think he could be a guy who adds a few more splash hits over the last few, you know, the next few years to the Giants total, no doubt.
Like, he won't be starting tonight because it's a left-handed pitcher for the Braves, but Fulton Avish and Sanchez are pitching on Tuesday and Wednesday, and they're righties, so I bet Shaw's in the lineup for those. And a reminder to everybody that Wednesday's game is a Facebook freaking game.
Oh,
so you
God.
Have to log on to Facebook to watch Wednesday afternoon's matchup between Derek Holland and Anibal Sanchez.
Of course.
I'll leave that at 3.54. Facebook, I hate that. And I've said it before. It's never the Cubs or the Yankees on the Facebook game. No, it was the Giants and the Braves. I mean, they gave you one of the best pennant races baseball has ever seen. Put the Royals and the Tigers on the freaking Facebook watch.
Yeah, that's bad.
Yeah, it sucks.
So coming up, the Giants have this homestand here, 3 versus the Braves and then 3 against the Rockies. I will be going to Saturday night's game against Colorado, so that'll be fun. I'm going to try to get up there early, get some interviews. Is that going to be bum?
It should be bum. I mean, bum. That's the fifth.
Well, that would be good.
That's the fifth day this week, so, yeah.
Okay, that would make sense. Yeah, 3 against Atlanta, then Friday night, and then, yeah, you're right. So, good one I'm choosing there. Let's see, you know, if he can kind of right the ship as far as his season is gone. Before we wrap up, I wanted to talk about some of the comments we received on YouTube, which have been great. So I'm just going to read a couple of these because... You know, Eric and I do this for fun. It's a hobby. It takes some time, takes a little bit of money, but we do love the Giants. We love talking Giants. You know, the podcast as a whole has been doing this now for more than 7 years. We started in the mid-season or so of 2011, so it's been a passion from the heart for us, and so we really do appreciate when we do hear feedback from you guys. But from last episode 152... Santa Ana Canyon said, bravo, enjoyable as always. And hey, if the Dodgers fall to the Rockies, I'll take it as a nice door prize for the season.
And amen.
We all agree with that, man. I mean, if they, the Giants, you know, if they can't beat the Rockies, at least they're going to help them win the West.
Shucks.
Oh, shucks.
Not the Dodgers, you know.
I know. Right now, they do have a half-game lead over the Dodgers. So, you know, if the Giants weren't swept by the Rockies, the Dodgers would be leading right now. Anyway, I don't want to talk about that because that's a dumb way to play the season. Never want to see that. Austin Cartwright also said, I've never been a fan of saying it could always be worse, but I mean, come on. Let's be honest. We technically improved from last season. Although it wasn't the improvement we had hoped for, we still improved. And I mean, it can always and it will get better in the coming years. It's just going to take some time for us to learn how to win again. But we as Giants fans need to keep the faith and determination to support our team, even in the lowest of times. And I like that comment just because even though, yes, it can always get worse. And we did that a couple of podcasts ago and it did get worse, by the way, 8 games in a row.
It really did.
So we kind of... Unfortunately, maybe Jake's the Giants, but we are with you, man. We don't want to sit here and just, you know, shit on the Giants and say that they're the worst team ever. We do recognize they, you know, are hitting a bad streak right now, and we need to support this team. Giants fans need to support this team and not just criticize everybody and say, if I was GM, I would do A, B, and C. You know, I see all those people on social media, which are the outliers, that are talking about, you got to get rid of these 12 players. And you're like, you just eviscerated half the roster. Do you have replacements for them? So it's this short-sightedness that I can't stand from certain fans. But they get mad, and I understand the anger and the frustration. But at the same time, if there were all-stars waiting in the wings, they would be called up, people, okay? This is the best they got right now. It doesn't mean that they're the best in the world, but it's the best the Giants have access to. And it's a process. It's a process of identifying talent, nurturing talent, and understanding when you need to let go or trade the guys that either have value or have passed their prime. It's very complex. It's not as easy as going, well, this guy's hitting 150 over the last week or two or three, so bench him or cut him and call up the next guy from the AAA who's hitting 200. I mean, that's not the way it works. These guys are getting paid millions of dollars. You know, the brass is getting paid quite a bit of money, too. They're not doing this because they don't care. They're not doing this because they're dumb. They're trying their hardest. And I guarantee you all these fans who think that they know better would do a much worse job because they don't understand the game. And that's a sad thing. And so it's very frustrating to see that on social media. But you just have to kind of go, OK, well, those again, they're outliers and they're not maybe the true fans.
I mean, they're true fans in their own way. Some people feel that criticizing is their way to be a fan, but as Austin said, it could always be worse. We might not have a team that's won 3 titles in the last 10 years. We just lived through a golden age of Giants baseball. I think it's fair to say it's over. So, you know, it was a great time to be an adult during that period. So it can always be worse, which is why I'd like to think that they'll put a competitive ball club out for next year.
Yeah, to think of all the you know, you hear these stories from the Red Sox families and the Cubs families, even the Astros from last year, who have had generations of fans that have never seen their team win. And, you know, the Giants won World Series in New York before we were born. That doesn't count for us, right? To say that we've witnessed 3 World Series championships in our adult years is more than 99%, well, except for Yankees fans, right? I mean, really, when you boil it down, it's like Yankees, Cardinals won 2, Red Sox won 2, you know,
Red
kind
Sox
of the last
3.
'04, '07, and '13.
So they had 3 in like 9 years. So
yeah,
I
so
mean,
you have
Giants
the Red Sox that
together.
Kind of are there, right? The Giants, of course, and then you got the Yankees from the late '90s who won a shit ton. The Cardinals won a couple. You start looking at kind of that span of like a generation, you know, 25, 30, 40 years or whatever, and not many teams have done what the Giants have done. And so I'm going to go ahead and take it. You know, we're not Rockies fans or, you know, Royals 1-1, you know, Reds been since 1990, Dodgers since 88.
Padres.
Padres never, right? Rangers never. You go on and on and on. And so I'm going to take what we can get now. But I do understand that window. I thought was still open in 2016. They got run in the playoffs by the Cubs. Thought it might still be open because I thought 17 and 18 were okay teams. They weren't. 18, it could still have at the beginning of the year. And even as soon as 3 or 4 weeks ago, I thought still had a chance of making the playoffs in even years, right? We had that even year magic going with us. And we realized that's closed now. So that whole magic of the even year, you know, stuff, that's done with. So let's just forget that. We had our window. It's not that we can't do it here soon, but it's going to take real work now. There's no magic left. Yeah. It's going to take actual good drafts, good, you know, lack of injuries, good moves, you know, on the managerial side. That's what we're back to. We're back to kind of like 2007, 2008, 2009 kind of time frame.
Yeah, it's blown up and starting over again, but it's not blowing the whole thing up. That's why the rash of injuries like Jones and Duggar are a shame. You want to see more of those guys. You know, you want to keep seeing Slater hit. You want to see Shaw out there, see if you can handle more than a strikeout. You know.
So I'm just going to close with one more comment. I already said Santa Ana Canyon, but he said a few weeks ago, "I truly love your show. You guys do it with so much class and lots of heart. This episode has become my favorite." That was episode 150. "Just a first-rate show for so many reasons. Thank you to you and what you do for Giants fans." Thank you so much, guys, for making these comments. It definitely helps Eric and I kind of propel and motivate for our recordings here every Monday or so. This is what we want. We want to just have a conversation with Giants fans. We want to be able to be what I call objective fans. And that's a little bit of an oxymoron, but at the same time, we're not the ones trying to go off the rails. We're not the ones doing this podcast, you know, because, you know, we're far left wing or far right wing or going for shock treatment or value. We're trying to tell it as the way we see it with a level of objectivity that I think a lot of people on social media just don't quite exhibit. So we're just trying to reel it back in, take the, you know, 10,000 foot view and say, okay, it's been bad. What's happening? What are the problems? What can they do in the future without cutting everyone's heads off? So I do appreciate that some listeners are recognizing the value in the podcast in that regard.
Yeah, I don't throw things anymore. I three championships, and you know, I do now and then. There was that night that I think it was—I don't remember—the Brewers, maybe. I don't know. Somebody gave up a homer late. It was the Astros series. That was it. I was done cursing and throwing things after that series. You know, after three world championships, it's hard to have too much of an edge. When you're looking at your team, you know, we'd have a much harder edge if we were Dodger fans or Rocky fans or, hell, even Diamondback fans. Yeah, they have two world championships. They have two world championships, don't they?
Yeah, same with the Marlins. It's stupid, right? Expansion teams. No, I just, the only thing I don't want to have happen is continuing this podcast into the future. And let's say it's the year 2040, not saying we're doing podcasts then. No way, we're not. But being an old man at, you know, at that age, going, "I remember back in 2010, 12, and 14. Like, I don't want that. I don't want that. I don't want that. So hopefully the Giants have something in them, a championship in the next 10 years, that kind of thing. So at least we're not going into this, you know, immense long drought of decades.
I'm staying up at till 10 o'clock first pitches, 10:15 first pitches for a reason.
Yeah. No, I mean, yeah, Eric, you know, you're in Georgia. You got that stupid West Coast time for the East Coast. It's hard. It's hard. It's even hard for me. You know, I got kids and work, and it can get in the seventh, eighth inning. It's 10:30 at night, and I'm like, crap, I need to go to bed. It's 1:30 for you. Like, that's insane.
You know? But that's also about the time I'm like, crap, I need to go to bed.
Yeah, exactly. Well, I know that's kind of one of the products of an East Coast bias is the fact that the East Coast goes to sleep before the West Coast games are done. So it's understandable to a certain extent. All right, well, I think that's going to do it for episode 153 of the TortureCast. You can check us out online at torturecast.com. Follow us at TortureCast. Like us on Facebook. You can follow us individually at 2OutHits. That's with the number 2 for Eric, and at ChadK21. You got anything to pimp, or you're still not doing your baseball thing, are you?
No, it's gonna be I'm not doing a damn thing. Yeah,
you're not doing a damn thing.
I'm not. I'm not. I'm watching football. I stumbled across money I had in a betting account I didn't realize I had, so I made 2 small bets yesterday and won them both. So I'm kind of just, you know, on days I'm not working, I'm just kind of chilling.
That's all good, man. So yeah, hopefully I start ramping up our kids channel again, Sandbox Family. We've recorded a couple of videos recently. I just got to edit and put it up. So if you got kids, keep an eye out for that. I'll go ahead and tweet it from my account, ChadK21. But until next Monday, this is episode 153 for Eric. This is Chad signing off, and we'll see you next time. Ba-boom.
A big thank you to everybody for listening to the TortureCast, the podcast by and for fans of the San Francisco Giants. Follow us on Twitter at TortureCast. You can also like us on Facebook or check out our blog at torturecast.com. I also want to say thank you to Ashcon and Bailey for letting us use their song Feeling Like a Giant for our intro. For Ben Lee and Chad King, my name is Willie Dills saying we'll see you next time.